Morning, everyone. Today is the 18th Daf of Nedarim, Daf Yud Ches. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is long as Zeichen Nishmas, Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. Mishnah and Daf Yud Zayin, which we saw yesterday, presented another fundamental distinction between Nedarim and Shavuos. When it comes to Neder, Yesh Neder Besoch Neder. There's one Neder that can be circumscribed within another Neder, but when it comes to Shavuos, that's not true. And again, based on the approach that we've been dealing with since the beginning of the Masechta, now over 2.5 weeks ago, so it's based on the idea that when it comes to a net, the net is going on an item, as opposed to a shvu, which is going on you. So once you say that this loaf of bread is usher to you, so that's it. What are you going to do? You're going to say it's usher again? Right? Ein esur chalal usher, but when it comes to nedarim, yesh neder besoch neder. Even as the Mishnah said very generically, that there's a neder within a neder, but the example really is by Nazir. And as I quoted Tosfos yesterday, and I'm going to quote the Ran today, later this morning, so you're going to see that really there's only one application of this principle of neder b'toch neder, and that's as it relates to a Nazir. So meaning that when you declare yourself to be a Nazir, you say, Hareini Nazir Hayom, Hareini Nazir Hayom, I'm going to be a Nazir today. Now the Mishnah's example is a little more tricky. The Mishnah's example is where I have the Naziros, I make the commitment of being a Nazir with a trigger of eating a loaf of bread. But either way, in other words, but the basic point is that if I commit myself to be a Nazir, followed with another commitment to be a Nazir, so then both of those commitments are going to be chal, they're both going to be effective, and you have to serve out two terms. You have to serve out one term, and then finish that term, which means that you have to shave, and you have to bring karbanos, and you got to serve another term. So that's the principle of yesh neder besoch neder, but with only very, very limited application, only to Naziris, not to the general Nedarim concept.
I'm not going to eat this bread for 30 days, and repeat the same sentence.
Yeah. So Hedy was asking that question yesterday, and it's a basic issue which I should know the answer to, and I don't, and it makes me, it humbles me. But by shvua, can you make a shvua for a term? Right.
You could do. So is it 30
day
after 30
day? Right. So, it's hard to imagine. I don't think so.
I know you're more out of comparison.
Right.
Because you're going to time.
The Gemara yesterday brought down a machlokas between Rav Huna and Shmuel. When we said in our Mishnah that you can make a double commitment of Nazir, Hareini Nazir and Hareini Nazir, and you have to serve out both terms. So Rav Huna says, yeah, that's true, but only if your first commitment is Hareini Nazir Hayom, and your second commitment is Hareini Nazir Machar. My first Naziris is going to start today, my second Naziris is going to start tomorrow. Now, the truth of the matter is your second Naziris is not starting tomorrow, because tomorrow you're going to be within serving your first Naziris term. But in other words, but if it were to start tomorrow, so then it would go one day beyond the first Neder. And we know, the Ram pointed out yesterday, that if you're a Nazir for one day by definition extends to 30 days. There's no such thing as being a Nazir for one day. So the fact that there's a Tosefis, there's an addition of the second Neder by one day, so that one day turns into 30 days. But according to Rav Huna, if I said I'm going to be a Nazir, followed with I'm going to be a Nazir, and both are going to be today, second one is not going to have a Chalos. It won't be an The second one won't be effective. Shmuel disagrees, and Shmuel says no. Hareini Nazir Hayom, Hareini Nazir Hayom. Even if you say that both are going to begin today, both Naziris are Chal, they're both effective. And again, you're going to have to serve out one term of Naziris, followed then by a second term of Naziris. Ad Khan, that is a summary of what we saw yesterday, the machlokes between Rav Huna and Shmuel. Like I pointed out yesterday, but let's just say it again. What is Rav Huna going in his favor? He has logic. Logic is going in Rav Huna's favor. Because Rav Huna says, look, if I start both today, what did the second one add that the first one didn't have? The answer, of course, is nothing. This first one says, I'm going to be Nazir, I'm starting today. Second one says, I'm going to be Nazir, I'm starting today. Well, that's identical to the first. So what does the second introduce that the first one doesn't have? Nothing. That's why Rav Huna says that the second one is only going to be effective if the second one adds something to the first one. That's what Rav Huna's got going for him. What does Shmuel have going for him? The Mishnah, right? What does the Mishnah say? Yesh neder besoch neder. Meaning the simple language of the Mishnah really does favor Shmuel's position, that's the whole chiddush of the Mishnah, is that even though the second one is going to be an identical overlap of the first one, but still, that's exactly the point, that the second one is going to be chal. Yesterday we went through a series of Mishnayos and Braisos, really all attacking Rav Huna's position. Shmuel's position is throughout this entire discussion pretty much not touched by any Mishnah or Brisa, and Rav Huna gets roughed up a little bit over the course of yesterday's Gemara. We are Meisvei. We're now starting on Yuzayin Amud Beis. It's about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud, and once again, we're going to be quoting now a Tosefta. Tosefta from the first parak of Nazir, which once again is going to challenge Rav Huna's position. Mishnah Nazir Shtei Naziros, a person who declares himself a double Nazir, meaning he takes upon himself two Naziros. Manas Larishon. And what does he do? He counts the first Naziros. So the first one went 30 days. So good. So he counted the first term of 30 days. Ve'efresh karban. Setting aside a karban. Getting ready now to bring the karban for his conclusion of the first Naziros, because after he does that, then he'll serve out his second term. V'nishal alaha. And then what does he do? She'ela. Then he asks a Talmud Chacham to be released from the first Naziros. Okay, it's something we haven't really treated yet in the Masechta. We're going to be talking about this later in the Masechta. That whenever you make a Nadir, a Nazir included in this idea, or for that matter, even Shvuah. Shvuah can also be released with a She'ela. So what you could do is you can go to Talmud Chacham and say, had I known X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't have made this Nadir. Or had I known X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't have made this Naziris. And so you ask to get released, and if the Talmud Chacham finds a reasonable argument to release you, so he'll release you from the Nadir. When a Talmud Chacham releases you from the neder that you made, so it's not a release from this point going forward, but basically he uproots the entire neder from the very inception. So here, again, what's the case? The case is talking about a person who committed himself to being a Nazir two times. Seemingly both are starting on the same day. Again, they both can't be served on the same day, but he formulated both for the same day. Then, after serving one term, he asks the Talmud Chacham for a She'ela to be released from his first Naziros. So here's what the Braisa says. Here's what the...
He hasn't completed his first.
He's about to complete his first one. He set aside Karbanos for the first one. He hasn't offered them yet. V'nish Allah, Altalo Shnia Barishona. So the Tosefta tells us a really big Chiddush, and that is as follows. Now that the first Naziros has been totally expunged, so now here's what he can do. Those 30 days served can be applied towards his second Naziros, because the first one doesn't exist. It retroactively was totally expunged. So therefore now, time served can be counted towards the second Naziros. That's a big chiddush of the Braisa, of the Tosefta, but that's exactly what the Tosefta is trying to teach us. Now,
I
thought you were heading in the other direction. In other words, while serving those terms, he didn't have Kavana to. I understand that. It's a chiddush. So hey chidami. Ile madame harini nazir hayom harini nazir lamachar amay altalo shnei brishona haika yuma yisera. Now again, Rav Huna says that the only time the second is going to be effective is the second is adding at least a day over the first. So now let's ask a very simple question. According to Rav Huna, what did the Braisa say? All those 30 days that he just served, well, because he's not going to apply to the first Naziros, because that's been expunged, so therefore it can be applied to the second Naziros. Wait a second. According to Rav Huna, second Naziros hasn't concluded yet. There's still one more day to go. So what does that mean, that time served can be applied towards the first, towards the second, but there still should be one more day that he should be serving. So that's a question on Rav Huna. So Ha'ika Yuma Yisera Ela Pshita Dame Harein Nazar Yom Harein Nazar Yom Usi Yufta De Rav Huna. So it must be that the cases where he said I'm going to be a Nazir today, followed with I'm going to be a Nazir today, then at the end of 30 days, as he sets aside the Karbanos, he goes to Talmud Chacham and says, I want to be released from my first Naziris. Talmud Chacham says, and again, without going through the details of why, but the Talmud Chacham says, fine. He gets expunged. The first Naziris gets expunged. And now the entirety of this of that time served can be applied to the second Naziris. And when did the second Naziris start? Back on day one. So now all these 30 days that are served can be applied towards the second Naziris. This seems to be a good proof for Rav Huna. The Gemara says, Lo la olam harini nazir ayom harini nazir lamachar amay alta lo la bar me'u yuma yasera. So the Gemara says, look, it is problematic for Rav Huna, and in fact, oddly enough, the Gemara here uses the word tiyufta. Tiyufta is usually the Gemara saves that term for like a total refutation. But the Gemara says, but the truth of the matter is, we could really defend Rav Huna. Look, what's the point? The point is that time served can be applied towards the second neder. Okay, there's one more day to go. Okay, the Bryce's point is that the last 29 days could be applied towards the second. Okay, there's one more day to go. Fine. Yes, there's one more day to go. That's one way to read the Braisa. Or the Gemara says, or maybe the Braisa is describing something else. And that is that he doesn't accept upon himself a first term of Nazirus and a second term of Nazirus, where there, according to Rav Huna, that's not going to work. The second one is not going to work if the second one doesn't add to the first one. But if he does them simultaneous Nazirus, even Rav Huna is going to admit that that is effective and that will and that would work. And if that's true, for reasons which we're about to explain why that should be, and if that's true, so then that could be what the Braisa is describing. And if that's what the Braisa is describing, so once again, the Braisa does not oppose a challenge to Rav Huna. Why should it be that simultaneous Nazirus work? First of all, simultaneous is a little bit tricky, right? How do you do simultaneous Nazirus? Meaning you have to utter a sentence, followed then by another sentence. So really, it's not bevas. It's hard to imagine it's bevas achas. So here, you could suggest that maybe he says, "I'm going to serve two Nazirus terms." Okay, that's one possibility. Or maybe he could say that both Nazirus are going to be triggered by the same, by one act. And so with that one act, he's going to be triggering both Nazirus. Okay, couple.
Bring double
kavanah. Yeah. So right. So no. What he'll have to do is that they both apply. They're both now in place, and he's going to have to serve each one independently. But the idea is that as long, they're not running concurrently. He takes it upon himself simultaneously. Once he does that, they're both in place. Even according to Rav Huna, Rav Huna is only objecting to the idea where he says, "I'm going to be a Nazir," then follow with another statement of, "I'm going to be a Nazir." If the second statement doesn't add anything to the first, then it's not going to work. But simultaneously, it would work. Okay, Ad Kan, that is a defense of Rav Huna. Mace of Rav Hamnuna, we're going to go through one more. We're going to quote one more Mishnah of Raisa that once again is going to seem to be supportive of Shmuel's position and very problematic for Rav Huna. We're on Yud Ches Amud Aleph. We're four lines down. We're quoting another Braisa. Nazir lazir mikanshin nazirus chal al nazirus. We learned that a nazir can be chal on top of another nazir. Okay, basically the point of our Mishnah. But here in the Braisa, what do we get? Shiyachal. We get a havamina. Shiyachal v'alo din hu ma'shvua chamura. Look, shvua is much more severe. It's much more strict than nazirus, for reasons which we're going to articulate later on. So, ein shvua chal al shvua. And we know the rule is that once you make one shvua, you cannot have another shvua overlay on top of the first shvua, like we learned back in our Mishnah. And we know that shvua, we don't know this yet, but let's say it. And we know that shvua is more severe than nazirus. So now we're going to develop a simple kal v'chomer. If shvua is more severe than nazirus, and one shvua cannot overlay on top of another shvua, so nazirus kala lo kol shekein. So nazirus, which is more lenient, it's lighter. So if I can't have a shvua lay on top of another shvua, I can't have nazir lay on top of another nazir, at least using the methodology of kal v'chomer. Tam lomer nazir lazir mikanshin nazirus kala nazirus. So what does it teach us? No, you can nazir lahazir. Nazir lahazir teaches us that you can that one nazirus can lay on top of another. Meaning, despite the fact that there is a kal v'chomer and the logic seems like sound logic, nevertheless, that's exactly what the Torah is being mechadish. That you can make a double statement of nazirus, and one is going to, and both of them are going to be chal, both of them will be effective, and again, we'll have to serve out in two different times, but they're both going to be effective.
So this is a shvua, doesn't have
a
time.
Right, I know. You missed it. We were discussing that earlier this morning. So no. I'm only smiling because I'm not sure if that's right, and I feel bad. I should know that. But anyway, so heichi dami ilay medamar harini nazir hayom harini nazir lamachar hakrabaye. So the Gemara says, look, according to Rav Huna says that the only application of this rule is if one starts today and the second starts tomorrow. But the Gemara says, according to Rav Huna, I don't need a pasuk. Meaning, like we said, and like we've been saying, that's logical. If the second one is adding to the first one, so then they're both going to be chal. And then I wouldn't need a pasuk to make this point. It must be that he made both nazirus on the same day. I'm going to be a Nazir today. Second statement, I'm going to be a Nazir today. And that's the Chiddush of the Pasuk. V'ktanin Naziris Chal Naziris. So that would seem to be the point that Bryce is making. And once again, it would seem to favor the position of Shmuel. And it would be a critique of the position of Rav Huna. The Gemara says, lo, dekulei amak kagon shekibo alav shein Naziris bevas achas. Okay, so the Gemara says, once again, maybe we could be describing a scenario where simultaneous commitment, where he made both commitments at exactly the same time. So again, like I said earlier, could be that he says, I'm taking upon myself two Naziruses. Okay, that makes sense. Or again, he could trigger both with one act. Okay. Now, the Braisa said very casually, right, like as a basic assumption, you know, Shvu is more severe than Nazir. Why should that be? So the Gemara says, well, we know that Shvua applies to intangible items. Like we learned earlier in the Masechta. I make a Shvua, I'm not going to sleep. That works. I make a Neder. Well, sleep is not tangible. So it doesn't work. So the Gemara says, maybe that's the Chomer of Shvua. The Gemara says, Neder nami chomer shekein chal al mitzvah, kirishus. Gemara says, okay, but This is not a one-sided discussion. We know that there are chumras that you have by nedarim. Notably, I can make a neder on a mitzvah, like we discussed a couple days ago. I'm making a neder that I'm not sitting in that sukkah. That's an effective neder. Shvua, however, you make a shvua, I'm not sitting in the sukkah. By shvua, that's nothing. Your shvua you can't make a shvua to be mevatel a mitzvah. Good. So you see that there's chomers by nedarim. So ala mishum dechsiv ba b'shvua lo yinakeh. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what makes the shvua more severe? When the Torah describes the shvua in the Aseret HaDibros, Dibra number 3, so the Torah says, lo yinakeh, that you don't get expunged. Meaning that the making of a shvua is so severe that even there's never a full pardon for a shvua. Now, exactly what that means, I'm not really sure. In other words, it speaks to the idea, which is what the Braisa mentioned, that shvua just has a severity to it that really can't be compared to regular nedarim. Okay, and based on that, the Gemara developed a kavachomer. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of this discussion. Okay. Let's go on, and then I'll go and I'll discuss the run. Amar Rava. Just let's finish up to the bottom of the Amud, and then afterwards we'll come back and we'll discuss a couple points. Initial Rishon Hashniyah Chala Alav Mimai. Okay, I'm sorry. Let me read the heading. Okay, back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Yudzayin teaches us that if I make a shvua followed by another shvua, the second shvua doesn't have chalos, it's not effective. Because the first shvua is already there in place. So let's say I have a wonderful piece of cake in front of me. So I make a shvua that I'm not going to eat it. Not a neder. I make a shvua that I'm not going to eat it. And then I follow it up with another shvua. The second shvua is not chal. Because the first shvua already prohibits me from eating it. Good. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Amar Rava, im nishal arishon ashniya chal alav. So Rava tells us the chiddush. And that is, it's not that the second shvua doesn't exist at all. It's there. It's hovering. Meaning that if in the event the first shvua gets removed, the second shvua comes and takes its place. Mimai, Rebbe says, how do I know this? Midalokitani, eino ala achas. Because read the Mishnah carefully. The Mishnah does not say that if you make two shvuas, it's really just one. It's only one. The Mishnah doesn't say that. Viktani einu chayav ela achas. The Mishnah says you're only going to be chayav for one of the two, meaning that in a virtual reality, the second one is there. It just can't apply because the first one's already in place, and the second one can't be there. But the second one is kind of hovering; it's in the cloud. So, and practically speaking, that would mean then that if the first one were to be removed, i.e., you went to a Talmud Chacham, he asked a Shela from the first one, so the second one would come in place. So, Rav Chuhuda Leisla Ki Mishal Chaver Techayla. That's exactly what the Gemara says. If you ask a Shela on the first one, second one comes into place. Lishna Achrina. Gemara is going to now do this again, slightly modified language, but the same basic point. There's no liability for the second shvua, but there is an actual second Shavua, just without liability. Lamai hilchaso lichad Rava. And practically speaking, what does that mean? It means what Rava taught us. Nishal vishona alta lo shnei tachteha. That if you make a She'ela on the first one, so the second, and the first one gets expunged, second one comes into place. Lehem misayele, the Gemara now wants to bring a proof to this idea. We go back to the Brisa, the Tosefta that we quoted at the beginning of today's shir, and that is a person who accepts upon himself two Nazirus, and he counts the first one, and after concluding the first one, he sets aside his Karbanis, but he doesn't bring the Karbanis yet. He goes to a Talmud Chacham and says, I'd like to be released from the first one. Talmud Chacham says, sure, no problem at all. So what happens, taught the Tosefta earlier this morning, the second Nazirus now can be applied to the 30 days that he served. Time served for one, which has now been expunged, can be applied towards Nazirus number two. That's what we learned earlier this morning. So Kagon, and what does that show us? It shows us that the second Nazirus at least virtually is there. And practically speaking, that means if the first one's been removed, the second one can take its place. And what the Gemara now wants to argue is the same thing is true regarding Shavuos. That if I make a double Shavua, so the second one, it's not nothing. It exists. It's up in the cloud. But in the event that the first one's been removed, the second one can take its place. So once again, the Gemara just deflects. Kagon Shekibo Alav Shein Nazirus B'Vasach. The Gemara says, well, maybe the Tosefta, like we suggested earlier, is not talking about where he made Nazirus one statement, followed then by another statement, but maybe the Bryce is talking about where it's simultaneous. If it's simultaneous, so then the argument could be that the second one could take the place of the first one. But if it's not simultaneous, it's one after the other, maybe the argument would be that the second one cannot be a replacement of the first one. And then he would have to then serve a second 30 days for the second Nazirus that he made. Okay, it's just a deflection of the proof. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of Yudches Amud Aleph, and let's just go over now, very interesting idea discussed by the Ran. The Ran over here on this Amud, as you can see, it's very long. I know it's very long on a lot of the Amudim, but just I'll speak out two basic ideas from this Ran. First, the first idea that the Ran mentions over here, which we said yesterday's daf, but we're going to repeat it again today. The Ran says it today in today's daf, is that even though we said categorically that yesh neder besoch neder, that there's one neder within another neder, so it has very limited application, and that is it only applies to nazir. It actually doesn't apply to neder. And the Ran over here argues, I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Because in the world of nedarim, okay, what's a neder? So that delicious piece of cake in front of me, so I want to resist it, so what do? I make a neder. Now a neder goes on the object. The object now is forbidden to me. That's a neder. Now if I make a second neder, so what am I doing? I'm making that object forbidden to me again? It's already forbidden to me. We have a principle of ein iser chalal iser. So the Ran over here says that even though the Mishnah sounds like we're making this very general statement of yesh neder besoch neder, it's not really true. Meaning, when it comes to regular nedarim, once the cake is prohibited to me via neder, so that's it. It's prohibited to me. So the only application of this principle of yesh neder besoch neder is only by nazirus. Okay. We said that yesterday, just to repeat that again today. The Ran, we're going to do this part of the Ran inside. The Ran now has an interesting discussion. 6 lines down from the lines getting wide. It's a bold word. It starts with the word Zilkach. The Ran now is going to be discussing the following. We know the rule is a Shavuah cannot ride on top of another Shavuah. We know that a Neder, at least Nazirus, can ride on top of another Nazirus. What is not discussed in the Gemara and what the Ran is going to be discussing is the following. What if I try to mix and match a Shavuah and a Neder? Can a Shavuah lay on top of a Neder and vice versa? Can a Neder lay on top of a Shavuah? Interesting where this discussion takes us. Okay, so a Shavuah cannot ride on top of another Shavuah, and a Neder cannot ride on top of another Neder. And again, because like the Ran said earlier, the only idea of a second application is only going to be by Nazirus. The imamar konim alai kikar zeh konim alai. I'm sorry. The imamar konim alai kikar zeh. Konim alai kikar zeh. So eno chayv alachas the chitani yesh neder besoch neder dafkalam noshtin nazirus udamrinan kidekasivna. Okay, I'm sorry. That was just a That was just the point that one neder cannot lay on top of another neder. Meal. In one regard, neder is literally better. Better over here means not positively, but stronger than shvua in the following regard. Shehanedarim chalam al hashvuos, v'in shvuos chalas al nedarim. A neder can apply on top of a shvua, but a shvua cannot apply on top of a neder. Let's illustrate this idea of the Ran. Ketzad. Nishba sheyochal kikar zev achar kach asur alav bekonam. Let's say a person makes a shvua, and the shvua is, I'm going to eat this loaf of bread. Okay, so, starting point. He makes a positive shvua. I'm going to eat that loaf of bread. So now he's bound by the shvua. Remember, like we learned yesterday, lahara or leitiv. When you make a shvua, it could be either positive or negative. It could either be a do or a don't. So he makes a shvua that he will eat this piece of bread. Okay, good. And then, afterwards, what does he do? And then afterwards, he says, through a neder, that loaf of bread now is going to be prohibited to me. What would result? The Ran writes, "Asur la'achlo." You can't eat that loaf of bread. Even though you are first bound by a shvua that you will eat it, followed then by a neder that bread becomes asur to you, the neder takes effect.
Isn't this parallel to the case where he said somebody like a mitzvah says, "I'm not."
Perfect, perfect. And how perfect was your point? Kedar min la'el, because that's exactly what the Ran says. You know what this is similar to? It's similar to what we said earlier. Konam sukkashani oselulov shani no tel asur. So if your person says through a neder that this sukkah is prohibited to me, we said earlier, that applies. Now, you're already bound by a shvua to sit in the sukkah. What shvua are you bound by? The shvua that we all made collectively at Har Sinai. We said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, every 15th day of Nisan, we're running into our sukkah. And we're going to live there for the next 7 days. Sometimes 8. Because again, if you think about this analytically, from an abstract perspective, it makes perfect sense. The shvua is going on you. The neder is going on the object. So fine. So even though you have a mitzvah to eat the bread, but through your neder, the bread becomes asur to you. So from an analytic standpoint, it makes sense. And then the Ran says, and oh, by the way, it could also work in a negative sense. Meaning, let's say your shvua, again, we're starting with a shvua. Let's say your shvua is that I'm not going to eat that loaf of bread. Followed then by a neder saying that loaf of bread becomes prohibited to me. So is the neder going to be chal? Sure. Because the shvua is only saying you're not going to eat that loaf of bread. The neder is the loaf of bread now becomes prohibited to me. Okay, so what difference does it make? Meaning shvua and neder are both telling you can't eat it. So the difference would be for punishment. For punishment now, you'd be in violation. If you eat that loaf of bread, you'd be in violation of two isurim. One for your shvua, and a second for the neder. V'chein b'din, and levatam min, hein, chan l'kain lo kol shekein. U'me'aytayma gufa de kasvina de kevin de shvuas lesnu, ela isur gavra, ki amar koni mitosev be isur chavtza. Aval. Okay. So that took us through the first point. After you made a shvua, a neder is going to be effective because the shvua is going on you and the neder is going on the object. Fine. Now let's reverse. Now let's start with a neder, and can there be a shvua after a neder? Now, if I didn't read on the Ran and I asked, and if I made my own personal guess, I would have said, yeah, it sounds right. Meaning because again, if I start with a neder, the neder is going on the object. I followed up with the shvua is going on me. So I would have told you, if I were left to guess this next point of the Ran, that it works in the reverse as well. And this is going to be interesting. And the Ran says it doesn't work in the reverse. Let's see this Ran inside. Aval. In the Ran, it's as the lines are wide, it's about halfway down. And the first word in the line is Ein. Ein ashvuz chala ala nadarim. Lo levata vo lakayim. A shvua cannot be said after an eder. Why not? So if you aser this loaf of bread, and then afterwards you make a shua, so you're not allowed to eat it. V'cheinami nishba alav shalo yechlenu ain't over ela mishum bayachel. V'leikel amemer dechi hechadaser cheftzen and dam chayal eitzer gavad yeshvuos. Hachinami eitzer gavad yeshvuos lechol eitzer cheftza. And don't make the argument, which is what I would have made, which is, well, you know, the shvuah is only going on you. The neder is going on the item. So if I start with a neder and I follow it up with a shvuah, right, good. The neder was only going on the item. The shvuah is going on you. So the Ran says, don't say that. Why shouldn't you say that? Mishum de mendarim ki hechad yisbu yisr chefza yisr gavra nami yisbuhu. So the Ran over here says a big chiddush, and that is as follows. That when it comes to the making of a neder, really, contained within every neder are two things. Number one, the item becomes forbidden to you. Meaning the neder, as far as you are concerned, transforms the item from a davar mutter to a davar asr. Okay. But then the Ran points out, but the neder also does another thing. It creates for you an isr gavra. Why? Shemikevan shenesar alav, because once that loaf of bread becomes asr to you, kai ala belo yachel devaro. If you now go ahead and you eat that bread, which you prohibited through a neder, so again, the bread itself becomes asr. If you eat that bread, so what did you just violate? You violated the isr in the Torah of lo yachel devaro. You profaned your words by eating the bread. So every time you make a neder, the object becomes prohibited, but you also become prohibited from eating it because of the prohibition of lo yachel devaro. Vayalav isr gavrahu. The Ran says, that's an isr gavra, that's a you issue. Kechol lo sa'aseh b'Torah. It's like any law in the Torah, which is the prohibition's not on the object, the prohibition's on you. Okay, so that's why a shvuah cannot lay on top of a neder, because contained within every neder is both an isr chayfetz and also an isr gavra. Okay, that's the that's
that explains the hybrid of a nazir.
Right. Yeah, in other words, right. The nazir may have invested in him both the isr chayfetz and the isr gavra. Okay, big point in the Amud Alf today from the Ran. Let's move on. We're on Yud Ches Amud Beis. We're starting now with the Mishnah. Stam Nedarim Lahachmir. Okay, another big rule as it relates to Nedarim. Like this second parak of Nedarim is like the big rule parak. Like give us all the fundamental rules of Neder, how it contrasts to Teshua, how it's more Machmir, how it's more Mekel. And now another big rule, Stam Nedarim Lahachmir. If I make a neder, and I'm not very specific about what I meant, and it can go in one of two directions. One direction, if I meant it one way, so then the neder is going to be chal. If I meant it another way, so the neder is not going to be chal. So where do we turn when the person makes an ambiguous statement? We go lahachmer. Uperusham lahakel. And the way the Ran understands this next line of the Gemara, but what if after he says the words, the ambiguous term, then afterwards he says, oh, you know what I meant? Here's what I meant. And he gives pshat on what he meant. So then, if he's telling you what he meant, so then you could follow his pshat. But if he doesn't explain, and he just makes a very ambiguous statement, and it can go in one of two directions, we're going to go on the side of Chumrah.
Yes, we talk
good. My guess would be yes, but I'll tell you the truth, I haven't seen anyone say that yet. So, let's see. Maybe the answer right now, the best I have for you right now is maybe. But I don't know. Ketzad. Let's go through a number of examples of this idea. There are two ideas in the Mishnah. Stam Nedarim Lahachmir and Perushim Lahakal. Right now we're focusing on the first statement of the Mishnah. A number of examples. Ketzad. Amar Hare Alai Kebasim Aliach. This cake that's right in front of me right now is going to be like salted meat. Salted meat? What's he talking about exactly? Salted meat is an ambiguous term. Now, salted meat actually is not that ambiguous. Salted meat usually refers to meat which is salted. But I'll tell you where the ambiguity lies. Generally speaking, when you talk about salted meat, you're talking about a carbon. Why? Because we know, first of all, right, that every carbon requires salt. Right? Part of the mitzvah of bringing a carbon is make sure you salt it. So that's one reason why, generally speaking, carbon is referred to as salty meat. Another thing, what I just said is in the Ran. Another reason why salty meat may be a reference to a carbon is because we know that a shlamim can be eaten for 2 days. Now, we have refrigeration, so we don't think in these terms. But after you shech an animal, so there is a very short expiration date for that meat after you shech the animal. So you're going to now shech an animal, and without refrigeration, you're going to eat the meat on day two. So you know what they used to do for preservation? Salt. That's they salted the meat. So another reason why it could be that salty meat is a reference to a carbon. But he doesn't say carbon. He doesn't say konam. He says salty meat. So it could be a reference to a carbon. So that's exactly the point. So since he said something which its interpretation could be lahachmir, we're going to go lahachmir. Now, if afterwards he then goes on to explain, and he says, oh no, that's not what I meant. This is what I meant. So that's the next point of the Mishnah. But right now we're not explaining the second point of the Mishnah. We're just explaining the first part of the Mishnah. He makes a neder. He says, this piece of cake in front of me is going to be like salty meat. It's just ambiguous what he meant with salty meat. That's exactly the point of the Mishnah. We're going to be machmir. Kiyai nesach, or let's say he compares it to yai nesach. Now, once again, yai nesach, what is yai nesach? So yai nesach could either mean wine that's libated on the Mizbeach. Oh, that's good. That's good. Meaning that would be a valid neder because he's comparing it to something which is which is consecrated. Or Yai Nesach could also be a reference to Avodah Zarah. Now, if it's a reference to Avodah Zarah, so like we learned earlier in the Masechta, that's not a neder. In order to make a valid neder, you have to compare it to something which is Nadur, not something which is Aser. Yai Nesach is Aser. Im bishel shamayim shlamim or shamayim neder aser. Im bishel avodas kochav neder mutter. Okay, exactly the point. Meaning, so it can go in one of two ways. He didn't articulate which way it went. We're going to be machmir. Im stam aser. Hare alai kecherem. A person says that this cake in front of me is going to be like cherem. Now, what does cherem mean? Once again, it can mean one of two things. Im kecherem shal shamayim aser. Cherem could be I'm dedicating something to the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, which means then that you made a successful neder. V'im kechem shel kohanim mutter. However, there's another form of cherem. And when we get to erchim, we're going to be discussing this in much greater detail. But another form of cherem is cherem kohanim, where basically I'm going to take my house and I'm going to give it to the kohanim, a gift to the kohanim. This gift is called cherem, or could be called cherem, but basically the kohanim get it. Does it have kedusha? No. Kohanim can do with it whatever they want. So, if that's what I meant, it's mutter. So, but again, I just simply said the word cherem. It's an ambiguous term. V'im stam aser, that's exactly the point. That's the second example, or I guess third example, where if I say it's stam and I don't express what I'm saying, so then it's going to be aser. Hare alai kemaser, I say that this piece of cake in front of me is going to be like meiser. What did he mean when he said meiser? Im kemaser behema neder aser. Now, if he meant meiser behema, so then it's going to be aser. Im ishal garen mutter. If he meant meiser from the granary, meaning like as in trumas of meisers, so then it's going to be mutter, because meiser is not prohibited. The imstam, aser. Now, again, that's exactly the point of the Mishnah. If he just said the word meiser, and he left it in that ambiguous tone, without telling us which meiser he meant, so we're going to go l'chumra. Hareya like a truma. He says that this to me is going to be like truma. This cake in front of me is like truma. Im k'truma salishka neder aser. Now, when he said truma, he referred to the truma salishka, the three buckets that are taken out of the lishka, where the money was put in there, and that money then becomes consecrated and is going to be applied towards the purchasing of karbanos. So then that's going to be a neder. Im shel garen mutter. But if he meant truma, meaning truma that we give to the Kohen, that's not a neder. Now, we've already made this point a number of times, but let's make it again. And that is, truma is not a neder, meaning if I compare something to truma, that's not a davar hanador. So we've said already a couple of times, let's say it again, it's not a davar hanador. Because truma is iser. Truma is not a neder. Yes, it's true that you have to earmark which part is truma, but that's not a volitional act.
You're obligated.
So if that's what you meant, that's not an eder. Im stam aser divrei Rabbi Meir. And if it's stam, in other words, if you just say the word truma and it went unspecified, and it could either be a reference to truma salishka, or b it could be a reference to truma sagoren, and we don't know, we're going to be machmer. This is all the opinion of Rabbi Meir.
But
Up until now, you had a Stam Mishnah all along. So why does that say there
is? Well, because you'll see. Because we're going to get a conflicting viewpoint in this Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Amar Stam Truma B'Yehuda Asura B'Galal Mutar. So Rav Yehuda says it depends where you are geographically. If you say Stam Truma and you live in Yehuda, so then it's Asura. If you're living in Yehuda, what does that mean? It means that you're living within proximity of the Beis HaMikdash. So for you, you have a concept, you have a grasp about the Trumas HaLishka. Everyone knows about Trumas HaLishka. Everyone living within Yerushalayim knows about Trumas HaLishka. You have money changers all around. Okay, so people will say Truma while living within the environs of Yerushalayim, and they know that Truma by itself could be easily a reference to Trumas HaLishka. However, let's say you live up in the north. What do you know in the north about Trumas HaLishka? When you say Truma up in the north, that's farmland. So what are you thinking about? Think about Trumas HaGorin. So Begala Motor Sheinan Shegala Makiris Trumas HaLishka. Okay, so very interesting, and we know this to be true. So a lot of the meaning of words depends on where geographically you live. So if you are geographically close to Yerushalayim, Truma by itself means Trumas HaLishka. If you are geographically further away from Yerushalayim, so Truma usually means Trumas HaGorin. That's Rav Yehuda's point. Stam charam in Yehuda mutarim begala asurim shein anshigala makirin eschar mekohanim. And also the same thing is true regarding chayrim. Rav Yehuda says, if you say the word chayrim and it went unspecified, what does it mean? So Rav Yehuda says, it depends where you live geographically. If you live around Yerushalayim, so chayrim means chayrim mekohanim. Interesting. Why? Because the kohanim lived around Yerushalayim. Right? The kohanim, generally speaking, did not live up north. And it makes perfect sense. Because if you were a Kohen during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so you got called in for temple service two weeks out of the year. And also on Yontav, you're also there for every Yontav. So you probably want to find residence somewhere within proximity of Yerushalayim. So generally speaking, the Kohanim did not live up in the north, up in the Golo. So if a person says Cherem, so if he lived around Yerushalayim in the Yehuda province, so probably he meant Cher me Kohanim, because Kohanim around all the time. But if he said the word Cherem up in the Golo, there are not that many Kohanim living there. He probably meant Cherem Hektesh. And so therefore, just like Cherem Hektesh is a Davar HaNadur, so too when you equate this piece of cake in front of you to a Cherem up in the Galil, so Rav Yehuda says that's going to be a valid neder. Okay. Adkan Divrei Mishnah. Okay, let's just finish up today with the Gemara. V'hatanan. Savek Nizirus Lahakel. Sometimes you have to think really hard about a stira, and sometimes you don't have to think that hard. Okay, this is going to be one of the latter cases. Right? What do we learn in our Mishnah? Our Mishnah taught us that Stam Nedarim Lahachmer. That if you have a term that you said, which is ambiguous and can go one of two directions, so our Mishnah teaches us that we're going to be Machmer.
It's also a
Suffolk. Right. I understood. But in other words, it's not a suffix that you made a neder. You for sure said something. Just a question of what your intent was. So if it can go in one of two directions, so we're going to go on the side that you made a neder. That is our Mishnah. On the other hand, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. This is a Mishnah this is a Mishnah in Taharos. Okay. So the Mishnah over there says, suffix nazirus lahakel. That if a person is a suffix nazir, again, he made a statement, but it's ambiguous, so we're going to be Mako. So we have in front of us now a very straightforward stira. So today we'll start with Rabbi Zera's answer, but really it goes well into tomorrow's daf. But let's at least start it today. I'm Rabbi Zera Lokasha, HaRabbi Lazar, HaRabbanan. So the Gemara says, okay, so yes, it's true, the two do not coordinate one with the other, but it's a machlokas tanayim. And so we just simply reflective of a machlokas tanaim. Our Mishnah follows one Tana, and the Mishnah in Taurus follows the other Tana. The Tanya. And the Gemara says, and I'll show you that's a machlokas tanaim. Because a makdish chayaso vehemto. Let's say a person has either wild animals in his flock, or he's got behemoths, or he's got domesticated animals, right? In the animal kingdom, right? I know in my ninth grade biology, now going back many decades ago, so they spend a lot of time categorizing the animals, right? And then the species and the subspecies and, oh, I forget so much of it. But anyway, you remember. So in halacha, so animals categorically go into one of two places. Either it's behema or it's chaya. It's nice. It's easy. Right? Behema is generally speaking domesticated animals, and chaya generally speaking is referred to as wild animals. Okay? By the way, the difference between them is not kosher versus not kosher. Meaning there are many chayas out there that are kosher. The Torah gives us a list of, I think, 11? Okay, I don't remember. But anyway, that's not the difference. The difference is, generally speaking, behemoths can be offered as a carbon, chayas are not offered as a carbon. That's generally speaking the basic distinction. And then there's an animal out there that is somewhere in the middle, meaning unclear whether it's a behemoth or a chaya, or, of course, in every multiple choice question, it could be C. It could be none of the above. Or it could be both. I guess there's a D. So, but anyway, and that's called the koi. In fact, we so don't know what it is, we don't even know how to pronounce it. Some people pronounce it koi, some people pronounce it kvi, and I find that to be so appropriate. Meaning it's the kind of animal where we don't know categorically where it fits, then we don't even know how to pronounce it. So I'm going to call it a koi. That's just simply, you know, I could be right. But anyway, so let's say, out of his stable, so he says, I'm going to be makdish all my wild animals. Or he makes a statement, I'm going to be makdish all my domesticated animals. So hikdish is a koi. So according to the Tanakama of this brisa, koi is included. Even though the koi is a suffix, but it's included in his neder. So even though it's an ambiguous reference to the koi, but the Tanakama says it's included. Rabbi Lazar Omer, lo hikdish is a koi. And Rabbi Lazar says, no. No, he's not. He wasn't makdish the koi. He was only makdish those things which are absolutely fall under the definition of that which he said. If he said behema, it's only absolute behema. If he said chaya, it's only absolute chaya. But he didn't mean to include the koi. So mandamer mamonamayo lisfeka gufe namimayo. Umandamer mamonamayo lisfeka gufe kol shekain delomayo lisfeka. Now, it's true over here, it's not exactly the same as what we're discussing. We're discussing neder as it relates to you. That Bryce was talking about your property. But it's the same basic idea, and Rabbi Zera says, I don't really see a difference. Just like where the Tanakhama says that I include sfeikos of property in your commitment, so the same thing would be true for you. Meaning, if you made a commitment about yourself, and it was a suffake, which is going to be included as well. And that would be reflective of our Mishnah. On the other hand, Rabbi Lazar says that you were makdish the koi, just like ambiguous statements don't apply to your property, so too ambiguous statements don't apply to you as well. And that would be the Mishnah Taharas. Simply put, machlokes tanayim, whether or not stam nedarim are going to be machmir or mekel, the Mishnah in Nedarim, meaning our Mishnah, today's daf, Yud Ches Amud Beis, is reflective of the Tanakhama's viewpoint. The Mishnah Taharas is reflective of Rebbe Lazar's viewpoint. And we'll stop over here, and tomorrow we'll pick it up on the very top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, continuing this discussion. Let's just quickly wrap it up. We saw today an end of the discussion of the machlokes between Rav Huna and Shmuel, whether the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that a Nazir can be chal another Nazir, does that mean even if he wanted to start both of them today? So Shmuel says yes, and that's in fact the accepted halacha like Shmuel, that that even if he started them today, the Gemara really attacked Rav Huna again and again, but the Gemara defended Rav Huna, which, by the way, parenthetically, sometimes is a good proof that the halacha should follow like Rav Huna, as you saw the Gemara get so defensive. And then finally, the Gemara says that when it comes to Shvua, a Shvua is not chal another Shvua, but Rav taught us a chiddush, and that is that the second Shvua doesn't dissipate; it's still there, it's hanging out in the clouds. And if the first Shvua is removed, the second Shvua is going to be chal. And we spent a lot of time today discussing the Ran. The Ran says, "What if I have a neder followed by Shvua? What if I have a Shvua followed by the neder?" And the Ran told us a big chiddush this morning, and that is that a neder can follow a Shvua because Shvua is only going on you, and that is going on the object. But a shvua cannot follow a neder, because incorporated in every neder is really two things: an isra on the object and an isra on you as well. Okay, that was a big chiddush of the Ran this morning that we saw this morning. And then finally, the last thing we saw was the Amud Beis is the concept of stam nedarim, where if I make a statement, I'm clearly making a neder, but it's just ambiguous when I compare it to something, am I comparing it to a davar nadir or a davar asur? And it's not clear. So the Mishnah says, we're going to side on the chumra. We're going to be machmir, and he's going to, and the neder will be effective. The Mishnah Tara says just the opposite. Stam nazir says lahakel. And right now, we started with Rabbi Zera's answer, machlokas tanaim.